Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Good afternoon, Melbourne. Welcome to Escape Pod on Joy 94.9, and thank you very much to Pets Aloud. What an interesting experience to have you guys on a Saturday. It's so good to see you paws and all on this lovely, beautiful dove grey Anzac Day.
It was, and especially a story about dogs working with the forces.
You're with Joe and Mark, and we are both dog lovers, but we don't work with the forces. We have people who are joining us today who are very familiar at Joy and have put in lots and lots of hours to make Joy the place it is today.
I don't think you and I'd be sitting here so comfortably.
No, we wouldn't
if it hadn't been for all the work that these ladies have done.
Anne?
Hello.
Hello. Carol?
Hi.
Carol is a former Joy president. And Anne is a, how do we describe all the things you do?
Volunteer with the mostest.
I don't know, jack of all trades.
Yeah, a lot of admin stuff.
Everything that nobody else wants to do.
Exactly. It's all the stuff that we need to have happen that matters that doesn't get the attention. And you do it all. So, yeah, we take off our hat and doff our cap to you too. Both of you have given so much in volunteer time and contributed so much to making the space that we have on the airways available and continue to be on the air. So, firstly, thank you for that.
Thank you.
Want to recognise both of you. And your very, very patient partner who stuck by you all those times you were volunteering.
Oh, yes.
That's very interesting. Welcome to Escape Pod today.
Thank you
Wonderful
very much.
To be here.
So, ladies, you've been doing some travel, which is why you're in the escape pod.
Certainly have.
And you embarked on a fairly long vacation last year.
Yes, I started mid-November on a three-month itinerary.
Yep. And what was the itinerary?
The first 6 weeks was solo.
Yep. And where did that take you?
That took me to landing in Santiago in South America,
Again. God, this is the fourth week running.
Yeah. I didn't stay there long, just enough to go to the coast of Valparaiso and Viña del Mar. And then I shot up to Ecuador.
Yes.
To Quito to pick up a 10-day
Did you go into the forest and see how they make the chocolate?
No.
In the rainforest. Oh, I was reading about this tour and it's my must-do next destination. Three days to find out how to make chocolate in the forest.
Well, she did so much and I think you just asked her about one thing she didn't do.
Three months and no chocolate.
We have to go back, Anne.
Maybe if I like chocolate more, I might have done that.
Not a chocolate fan, Anne.
I just couldn't get to the Galapagos
quick enough.
So that was, flew in next morning, hardly any sleep.
Yep.
Off on the plane to join.
Wow. And how long had you been planning a trip to the Galapagos?
Probably ever since Chris and Carol went a couple of years before.
Okay.
I just fell in love with it based on their stories, their pictures. I've got to go here, go there, at wildlife, at the birds, because my hobby is birds.
And actually, let's talk about your birds. You are a passionate bird lover.
I am.
Yeah. And you,
I think that's called a twitcher.
No,
a twitcher is what we do on the interwebs.
No,
twitcher.
Twitcher.
Oh.
I'm not a twitcher. No. I don't go out.
What is that, like a furry? No?
No, I'm just a person. And I like birds.
Yeah.
And I might mention, though, quite seriously, that Anne also knows a lot about birds. It's not just that she likes them.
Almost
she does know a lot about them.
To ornithology type level.
Not necessarily, no.
But you've shared your home with birds.
Yes, I did.
Yes.
I have none living with me at the moment, but I had some rainbow lorikeets.
But you had an interesting story about a lost lorikeet one time.
I found one
found
that
one.
Was not lost, it had fallen out of the nest, and I gave it a home and took it away to the, you know, I won't mention names, to a wildlife.
A refuge.
Joint.
And because it had a broken wing. And short story, they were going to euthanize it, and I said, said, oh, okay, just let me think. And I just grabbed the shoebox and ran because I wasn't going to leave the bird. So I kept him.
And the birds that you saw in the Galapagos, did they live up to your expectations?
Oh, far exceeded. It's an extraordinary place.
Did you do a tour or did you do it all yourself?
It was a, I joined, as an individual, I joined a tour and there were 15 people on the boat. It was a catamaran. So we sailed around some of the islands, not all of them because there's too many. But, yep. So that was for 8 nights on the boat. So you're visiting and doing excursions onto the islands and you're snorkeling, deep water, shallow water.
Was it specifically a bird tour?
No.
No, but birds were just a big part of what was already there.
They're just there. They fly above your ship or your boat. Ours was a boat. Are walking along the beach and they just keep walking along the beach even though you're walking with them. They're not afraid. The animals, the seals, the dirt, nothing is
afraid
of you. Did
that surprise you that they weren't timid towards humans?
Carol and Chris, I knew their experience, so I was hoping that that was going to be my experience. I think, oh, maybe a couple of years, maybe humans have spoilt this, but it's something about Galapagos being so unique, so remote. For so long they were undiscovered by man, so they have, then there's no fear, absolutely no fear. The only thing where man has interfered, and it's a tourist has interfered, a mockingbird on one of the islands, because it doesn't rain. They're like tropical deserts. This mockingbird was obviously thirsty, and a traveller gave this bird some water from its water bottle. And now all the generations of this mockingbird have taught their young ones to go to humans to get water, and they fly, almost landing on you, and if you have a bottle, they'll peck it. I want a drink, I want a drink, I want a drink.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Our guide said, put your bottles away, don't let the birds see it. And as soon as someone took a bottle out to drink, here's the mockingbird going, peck, 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 I want a drink.
And you were thinking, to kill a mockingbird.
It's sad, it's really sad, because that one tourist has made that bird and that whole...
Dependent.
Totally dependent for water instead of it. Because it can find its own in cactus and whatnot, but it's chosen an easy option.
So what other birds did you find on those islands? Oh. All of the birds?
Nearly all of them. Blue-footed boobies.
I hope everybody's got their Google ready. So blue-footed boobies.
Yep. Gorgeous, with bright blue feet, white feathers.
The Christian Lambertson of birds.
They're the ones that do the courtship, so the male-female, and they do this courtship dance, and it's in unison.
Did you see them do that?
Yeah, of a fashion.
Yeah.
Yes. The chicks were already born, so it's probably juveniles practicing to be adults where you see that behaviour. Yeah, and there's a Nazca booby, which has yellow feet. And in that family, the male builds the nest of rocks. So he builds this nest and then he does all these prancing things to attract a female. And when a female lands near the nest he's built, he gives her something like a present. So this one that I was watching, he picked up a feather that had fallen from another bird and he passes it, and she didn't take it, so it fell. So he turns around and he picks up a little bit of a stone and tries to give her that, and then she didn't take that. So he picks up the feather again, and this time she took it. And we thought, oh, this is going to be a happy ending, because by now the others had joined me, our small group, and they were watching as well. The shorter story is, unfortunately, the female flew away. She wasn't suitably impressed by the gifts or his displays.
Oh, dear.
Joy 94.9 is on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But sometimes you can't always be with us when you want to. Here's the solution.
Here's the solution.
Listen to your favourite Joy 94.9 show anytime with our Joy podcast service. Our team of over 30 volunteers pick out the best bits from around 60 programs that Joy airs each week, made available to you for free download. To find a podcast of your favourite Joy show, search for us in the featured providers section within the iTunes store, or find them on the Joy website, joy.org.au. Joy Podcasts. Any show, anytime, joy.org.au.
You're on Joy 94.9. This is Escape Pod. Thank you very much for listening today. Joe and I have some very special guests, people who have been travelling for a long time together and apart. We've just heard from Anne, who's a key member of the Joy volunteer team here, talking about her recent trip to South America. But there's more. We've got former Joy president Carol. Carol, that was Smoke on the Water by Deep Purple. That's one of your favourite songs. Oh. And you're wearing a purple T-shirt. Is there a purple thing?
I am. No.
And a purple
watch.
There
isn't. No, there isn't a purple thing. No, there isn't really. No, I just like the riff.
Yeah, it's a classic
I love
track.
The riff. Yeah.
So thanks for bringing that to us today. Now, you and Anne have known each other and Your partner,
Chris, who's sitting here silent.
Yes. Silent witness, making sure that everything is under control.
Yeah, if we say the wrong thing,
we'll know about it.
My boy, will we know about it.
So how long have you been all travelling together?
We travelled together for the first time 2 years ago now, just about 2 years ago, when we went to Africa. And Chris and I had decided to go to Africa, and Anne was sort of keen, and we said,
Let's come along.
Mm. Why don't you come along?
So we're in Africa.
We went to Botswana, Kenya, and Tanzania.
Ah, nice.
For some big game hunting?
Well, no, the opposite, really.
Good.
Hunting with cameras.
And so when we met Anne through Joy, of course.
Yeah.
And when we were planning to go to the Antarctic, which Chris and I had been thinking about since the year 2000 when we flew over the Antarctic,
mm-hmm.
So 15 years we took us to save up. Mm. So anybody listening out there who's sort of figuring, I'd like to go to the Antarctic, start saving.
Worth doing.
Oh, worth doing, absolutely. I think Anne would agree with that.
Very much.
Yeah. Mm. But
I was hesitant, though, when you said you were going, and I thought,
why were you hesitant?
Well, to me, the word cruise was stuck in this process of this trip. So that was my roadblock, because I'd not done a cruise, and I'm thinking, I don't think I would like that, because I'm captive on a ship, I'm captive in this small cabin, and it's the same people all the time. Anyway, they told me about it, and then I actually looked up some more information, and Chris and Carol have a good friend, Sharon, and she'd been, and I thought, I need to do this as well.
But there are different scales of cruises that you can choose to go to Antarctica. So what did you go on?
This is not what I personally would call a cruise, because this is a way of getting to the Antarctic.
Yeah.
And that's really all it is. It's a way of getting there.
So it's a journey.
It's the transport.
Yeah. Right. You can't really go to the Antarctic any other way.
No.
So I think we can safely say that it wasn't a cruise ship. There were only 135 people on board. We had a huge range of different people who had expertise in the Antarctic, from naturalists, geologists, even an historian, every day that we were at sea, if we did not land, and some days even when we did land, there were lectures and talks about all sorts of stuff.
And did everyone get to disembark when you did land? Or
yep.
Yeah, you did.
So it wasn't one of those where you had to draw lots and 50% got off?
No.
Depending on the location, sometimes there's only 20 allowed or 50 allowed on land.
Mm.
So if you weren't on the land, you'd be cruising around the shoreline in a zodiac. So there was opportunity to do something, one or the other, and then swap.
Okay.
And look, sometimes cruising in the zodiac gave you more experiences and more to see than actually landing.
Mm. What would you prefer, actually, getting the boots on the ground or doing the zodiac? Would you prefer one over the other, or suggest?
I'm a hobby photographer, so the land, because the zodiac's going up and down.
Yeah,
it's a bit hard to take photos in focus.
But then, you know, if you're in a zodiac and you're cruising around the around the shoreline, yeah, often you can see stuff that you may not see if you land and you're confined to a certain area of the land.
It's that old trick about being able to turn around and see what's behind you rather than what's dead in front.
I was in a zodiac in the channel between the Shetlands and the Antarctic Peninsula. And Chris and Carol were in a different Zodiac already landed. So I'm in this one with some other people. And we were looking for whales, humpback whales, because we could see them. We could see their spray and they surface and then they dive down for 3 or 5 minutes.
Do they know that you're there?
I think they do because the Zodiac captain, that's one of the expedition staff. They're all trained. They're all experts at different things. They motor you to where they think it's going to come up.
Mm.
Okay. So when they dive, you're not quite sure because they go so deep, you can't see the bubbles anymore. So they guess. So there's three Zodiacs out there and we're waiting for this mother and calf to come back up. And the other two couldn't wait any longer, so they headed off to the shore. So our guy, he stays, and right where one of those Zodiacs was, up comes the mother and the calf.
Oh, beautiful.
And we were only maybe 50 metres away, so off he went, and we were right next to them. So they do this wave up and down, and she's swimming towards us with the calf. And she obviously sensed us or saw us because she turned the calf around. So now they were going away from us, literally 10 metres from us. So not that she sensed danger perhaps, but...
It's close enough.
It's close enough. Mm. So she decided, okay, we're going to dive. So she does, you know, the flute display from the whale. So when they dive, they duck their nose deep. And that pulls their tail. So their tail sort of goes up.
It's like the gravitational
pull. And it goes straight
pull.
Down. Mm. It's just magical to watch. And we were 10 metres from the mother and the calf.
And what's the sound like? Is it complete silence or is it quite loud?
They make noises. And they obviously use sonar for themselves, but we couldn't hear that. But you can hear them because it's silence. There's ice floating around. Mm. There's no wind. And the motor's off. You're just there. And you hear the water. You can hear them when the bubbles pop, when they're not so deep. And you hear the water splashing when they... And then when they go down, there's just all the bubbles and things and silence. It's magical. It's just... I just had to pinch myself. Am I dreaming? Is this me? How am I doing this? How am I in the wilderness, in the snow and the ice, and there's a whale just marvellous?
It might be wise to sort of mention, some people may not know what a Zodiac is.
Oh.
But a Zodiac is like one of those blow-up boats.
Yeah, I think they're cool with it.
Next to a huge, what does a whale weigh? It's 30 tonnes?
You know.
But it means that you are really close to the water. Hmm. You're not on a big ship.
You're close enough.
You're almost at waterline, aren't you?
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, because it's not a hard bottom vessel.
Think Navy SEALs coming in.
Yeah, you're sitting on
the Rainbow Warrior.
Yes. You're sitting on a sleeping bag.
No, you're sitting on the edge. You don't have seats. You're sitting on the outside.
It's an inflated sleeping bag.
Mm. So depending on the weather,
whale.
You get very wet.
You're exposed to.
Yeah.
Do you have a business, product or service that needs to be seen and heard? Become a Joy sponsor and get the best of both worlds. Have your message heard on air by 329,000 monthly listeners. Have your message seen online at joy.org.au via the Joy sponsorship directory. Sponsorship starts from as low as $295. And best of all, those who sponsor us for more than 1 month are featured on our listing free. Yes, free! Call 1-300-JOY-949 or email sales@joy.org.au for more details. Joy 94.9, the diverse voice of the GLBTI community.
We were talking with Carol and Anne just before about the Antarctica and whales and so forth, but your travels have gone much further afield. Well, probably less further afield. Anyway, where else have you been recently?
Me?
On your big 3 months off, yes.
Oh, we're
all of you together.
I did the 6 weeks was by myself, so just quickly.
Yeah.
Galapagos, Ecuador, Peru, the usual suspects, you know.
Oh, yeah,
Lima,
everyone's done that.
The rainforest. but I deviated a little, Lake Titicaca, but I deviated. I went into Bolivia.
Which is the hilariousest name in the world.
Oh, but magical too.
Why?
Remote, no, not as many tourists go there. The landscape is so different. You're on the high plateau, so you're running around, you know, 4,500 metres. That's, the, you know, you're in a vehicle travelling at that distance, so you can't do anything.
You can't hit your head on the moon.
You can't go for a run if you're so inclined. You're hard pressed just walking.
So how did you get fit, Anne? Did you have to get? Did you have to really work at getting fit to deal with that level of oxygen?
It doesn't matter. Your fitness level has got nothing to do whether you cope with altitude or not.
Really?
It's true.
Not at all.
Yeah, there's almost, and there's no real predetermining factors either, because I've been in high altitudes with people who are 20 years younger than I am, who are fighting fit college athletes, and they've been the ones that have had trouble breathing, as opposed to sometimes someone who's older. And I think it's a little bit like seasickness and fear of heights and things. You either get it or you don't. Yeah. There's no in between.
Yeah.
Do you suffer from altitude?
I suffered. Like, keto was my first experience in Ecuador, and I had a headache. This is when I came back from the Galapagos. Obviously, I was only there overnight, so nothing happened. I had headache. I was nauseous. I had no appetite.
Yeah.
None. So I was popping paracetamol to try and break the cycle, but it wasn't until I went to Lima at sea level that those symptoms went away. But, of course, then I went back to altitude when I went to Puno, Lake Titicaca, and then I went even higher in Bolivia. So I was really thankful to come back to sea level again when I got back to Santiago. Yeah. But I was taking low-dose aspirin to try and thin my blood a bit so it wasn't so tacky, that at least it would carry the oxygen.
It's a bit like getting high blood pressure, same sort of symptoms.
Yeah, it takes about 3 days, they reckon, for you to
acclimatize,
for you to build some more red blood cells. So that you can carry some more oxygen around. Because I did, the first tour I did in Ecuador when I came back from Galapagos, my guide picked me up at the hotel and drove into the middle of the city, and he parked in a car park, and we had to walk up 2 flights of stairs. Piece of cake, normally. I had to stop halfway and have a rest. I could not believe the impact that it had. It was so instant.
Did anyone warn you about it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, and the guide was fantastic. He said, and he saw me struggling. He said, okay, we'll go even slower. So we just dawdled, and I mean almost walking backwards, just dawdled everywhere and took our time, because I just didn't have enough oxygen to do things normally.
And I wondered how the athletes did it in Mexico City.
Because,
you know, when I've stayed in Mexico City, even just, you know, frolicking in the pool is hard work. You know,
The recent Soccer World Cup in La Paz in Bolivia, they had a couple of the matches there in their wonderful football stadium. The countries did there, they flew their team in 2 hours before the match. They did a training run, played the match, flew out.
Wow.
No altitude sickness at all, because they weren't there long enough for it to have an effect.
Impact.
Yeah, they could play normally, long as they left. Yeah, and it worked.
So you had a pretty good first 6 weeks then before you caught up with them.
Oh, saw lots of things.
Yeah.
Saw lots of things. I went to the Atacama Desert as well after Bolivia, which is the northern part of...
Yeah, driest place on earth.
Peru. Yeah, well, I went there too because Chris and Carol had been there before. Yeah,
and not too far away from where the volcano is erupting at the moment, is
that's
it?
A lot further. That's further south. That's northern Patagonia, that one. Yeah. And, of course, then I met up with Chris and Carol. It was Christmas morning for breakfast.
What a lovely Christmas
day. Oh, my God,
day.
So you had Christmas carols.
Thank you very much. That joke's been said
many times.
Never gets old. Never,
no.
Or Carol's Christmas.
But, no, she had Chris must Carol.
Got it.
As in the two of us.
So what was the plans to get there? So you've been on your own for 6 weeks, and now you've got two friends. Was it just the three of you now? So what went afoot? Was this in Bolivia?
No. We met up in Chile.
Santiago.
Okay. Yes.
And we had Christmas Day, which really wasn't very Christmassy at all. We spent 3 hours having breakfast because Anne hadn't seen somebody who could speak good English for 3 weeks. 6 weeks. And then we did a bit of a walk around town, the usual thing, before we flew out to Buenos Aires. And that was really the main start of the trip for us, because we were heading to Iguazu Falls. So we had a day in Buenos Aires. We headed to Iguazu, which was the real reason we went we wanted to go to Buenos Aires, we needed to get to Iguazu Falls. Most
to
fantastic.
See some birds?
Yeah, of course she saw birds.
In Buenos Aires?
Everywhere.
At the falls, yes. Iguazu Falls.
Oh, everywhere. I could
so the falls
talk for
are there,
5 hours
Anne's
without stopping.
The other way, yeah. Looking at a sparrow.
She is. And look, Iguazu that. Falls is one of the most, I think, and you'd probably agree, it is one of the most wonderful waterfalls or waterfall systems that you're ever likely to see anywhere in the world. It's just truly amazing.
As far as visibility, because we did the Brazil side first.
Yep.
Which we had to get a visa for a day's visit.
Half
and
a
then
day.
We did the Argentine site the next day. So as visibility, it's extraordinary. I haven't seen all the waterfalls in the world, but I've...
It's hard to imagine they could be better, though.
Niagara Falls, I thought that was pretty special, but this just blows you away.
Describe them for the listeners who might not have even heard of the Iguazu Falls.
You think of a waterfall and there's rocks and a cliff and the water falls down in one big column. This has, I don't know, Carol, 100 columns of water coming over.
Yeah. And it spreads for an awful long way.
And what's the tributary that
On the Iguazu River.
Iguazu River.
Yeah, and the Iguazu River's very, very long river, actually. But this is the area that's got to be the most spectacular part of that river. There's various areas, as Anne said, and one of the most spectacular areas is the Devil's Throat, which is a particularly large drop, and there was a lot of water when we were there. We also did the helicopter ride over the top.
Oh, sensational.
So that gave us a great view of what we were about to go down on to the riverbanks and actually have a look at.
Plus, they're the important things to save up.
And we didn't get wet in the helicopter.
No. But on the second day when we went, it was raining, unfortunately, but it gave us a different view of the falls. But we also got in a boat, and the boat took us up the river, right up to the falls and under the falls.
How fantastic.
So we thought we were wet when we got in the boat. But yeah. By the time we got out, we were very, very wet.
I bet it makes Disney's Magic Mountain look a bit tame.
You know, you wouldn't miss it for quids, though, would you?
Exhilarating feeling. And you do have an element of not fear, but like alert, not alarmed. You know that thing, how far in is he going to go?
Is this safe?
But this water, the water coming over the waterfall, because it's dropping from a long way, it's like having someone empty their tip tray of sand on you. It's water, but it's like...
Hard.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's more than Norska Fresh.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not like your shower in the bathroom.
Gentle. No, because it would be kilograms of water coming down in buckets.
Yeah, and you scream. Like, I think all of us, you just like...
I don't
like,
scream,
ah! You know?
I'm sorry, but I don't scream.
Don't you?
Oh, no.
Chris,
no.
Did she scream? No, she's saying, oh, I don't know.
I don't scream, I promise. But after we went to Iguazu, that was just the start. We went down to Patagonia. El Calafate, followed by Tierra del Pain, which... Torres del Paine.
National parks.
And all of the areas of Patagonia. If anybody's considering Patagonia and you like... Well, not just wildlife, but really brilliant scenery.
It's certainly
the
glaciers
place to go.
In El Calafate. You can do a trip up to the Moreno Glacier. You would never be able to get that close to the front of a glacier anywhere in the world, I'm sure.
Even
apart
New
from there, I haven't been to New Zealand, but the landscape, obviously, bringing the glacier down through the valley. I've forgotten how long the front is, but it's like a wedge shape, because obviously the speed of a glacier is quicker in the middle than it is on the edges.
Pace.
Yeah. And it comes down to another piece of rock, you know, another cliff. And the entrance to the park where you go, the visitor section, you're staring at, like you can't touch it, but you're staring at the glacier and it's carving in front of your eyes.
You're right on the terminal moraine. You are right there, and you're only a few metres from the end of the glacier.
Well, while everybody's visualising that, we're going to take a short break and we'll be straight back.
Hi, Jason Gibbs here, Joy 94.9 Production Manager. Want to learn more about radio or audio editing? We're often looking for people to join our team as program production audio producers, responsible for producing podcasts just like this one. get involved, meet new people and learn new skills. Join one of the biggest community radio contributors of podcasts by volunteering for Joy's program production team. All skill levels welcome, no prior knowledge of audio production is required, and best of all, training is free for all Joy members. Keep an eye on the volunteer vacancies page at joy.org.au, and if we're looking for people to join our team, it'll tell you how to get involved right there. The Joy 94.9 program production team, powering Joy podcasts. Any show, anytime. Online at joy.org.au.
So, Carol and Anne, what else happened on the trip? What else did you see that was just
look, I think
top of the
probably
box?
It would be wise to just mention a little bit about the Antarctic, really, South Georgia and the Antarctic, because that was one of the main reasons for us going down to the tip of South America to actually get on a 3-week cruise down to, and we ended up at both the Falklands and South Georgia with landings. And
can I
then
just ask a question? Were the Falklands worth it?
Yes.
No, the war.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think anywhere. I doubt whether any war is worth it.
The locals think it was because they
absolutely
got their freedom.
Yeah, they believe that
their freedom to stay there.
But they were very badly treated by all accounts
by, whom?
By
the
these Argentinians. Yeah.
Were they?
Yeah. So,
in what
look,
sense?
I mean, I think it depends where you are. I found myself at one stage when we were in Argentina thinking, gee, you know, these islands are pretty close to Argentina. Why should they not be Argentinian? But then when we spoke to the people who actually have lived all their lives, were born on the Falkland Islands and have lived all their lives there, and you get their story and you go, well, why should they be taken over and have their houses taken away from them and their livelihoods and be told to drive on the other side of the road? You know, it's
swap the tea for tacos.
You know, it's absolutely it's a place that they've always lived, and it's actually almost more English than England, isn't it?
It's very Englishified.
Is it really?
But the British made it work. Other people had gone to live in the Falklands. They couldn't make it work. They couldn't raise their crops and keep their animals. The British went there, the pensioners, I think. They made it work.
So what are the crops there? Sheep?
there isn't a lot. There's a lot of stuff that has to be imported into the Falklands. But
they have their gardens and they grow their vegetables. Everyone's got a vegetable garden.
So it's vegetable?
Short growing season, but, you know, it's a bit like...
It's a bit windy too, isn't it?
Very windy. Look, it's an interesting place. It was certainly worth going to. We had about 3 landings in the Falklands, 2 on the West Island and 1 at Stanley, the main town on the East Island. But... You know, that wasn't really the highlight, I guess, of the trip. South Georgia was brilliant for birds and animals.
Describe South Georgia, because a lot of people would be thinking of the American state or the Eastern European country. Tell us about South Georgia.
I would describe it, it's a wilderness and it's all a national park.
And there is a little bit of crap that's been left there by whalers, which they're not moving because it's safer just to leave it and not touch it.
Ship
holes, whaling holes that you can still see sitting there in the water with the harpoon still sitting up on the bow.
For real?
Absolutely. The whaling stations, they used to actually boil all the blubber, all that sort of stuff. The big pots are all
rendering
still there.
Yeah.
Everything's
huge.
Still there.
It's like they're like a whole city block, like a factory that would cover a city block. That's how large these whaling stations were.
Oh, my goodness.
And they're all metal.
So they're just slowly
they're rusting.
Yeah. But they're not, interestingly, they're not rusting or deteriorating as quickly as you might think because of the freezing cold weather.
And the air, the cold air is dry.
Yeah.
So they don't get a lot of the salt spray onto them.
So it's quite an interesting thing to see. Historically, it's quite interesting. But the actual islands of South Georgia are absolutely pristinely brilliant, other than...
What does the vegetation look like? Is it...
Very stunted. There's like tussock grass.
Tussock grass and a lot of snow.
Right, so almost like tundra kind of...
Yeah, lichen.
And lots of penguins. I mean, more penguins than you will ever see anywhere in your life.
More birds, Anne.
More birds. Tens of thousands in just one place. Yeah. And if you can imagine a chorus of
40,000 king penguins. And you, you all, could go there just for that.
And they're all pooping at the same time. So the smell.
Yes, we heard last week the smell something too.
Is something to behold.
You actually end up smelling, your clothes smell like a penguin.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah,
but everyone smells the same.
We came back and literally washed every single thing.
So it's the bottom end of the penguin you end up smelling like.
You do.
Mm, the bit that comes out of the bottom, yeah. And another special thing about South Georgia, Shackleton is buried there.
Is he?
Mm. Yeah. And Shackleton and Wild. Wild. He's Shackleton's right-hand man.
The navigator.
And they're both buried there. There is a small, at Gritviken, there is a small cemetery where both of them are, and probably, what, another 20-odd?
Another 20-odd souls,
yeah.
There's a military base at Gritviken as well.
Yeah.
So there's a permanent...
Well, it's not a military base, Anne. Remember, there's no military.
It's a weather station.
Yeah,
a
weather station with...
With guns.
With guns,
with guns and planes with no identification on them flying
circling
around
our ship as if to say, who the hell are you? But, look, South Georgia is brilliant. We went on from there to the Antarctic Peninsula.
We went to the South Orkneys.
We did, yeah.
By fluke, we weren't supposed to go there, but the weather drove the captain to take a different navigation to try and protect us from getting too seasick, I think. So we had a bonus.
We went a bit further south before we went back west along the Antarctic Peninsula.
A caring captain. That's what you need on one of those cruises.
That place is so cold, even the people, the Argentine defence people who were there taking the weather readings, they don't like it either.
Community radio is all about breaking down stereotypes. Joy 94.9 would love to hear from women who can confidently work with all things engineering and IT. For more info, visit joy.org.au.
Well, I hope everyone's warmed up with that hot cup of cocoa.
And hopefully they're not in South Georgia, which seems to be perilously cold.
Well, they could be because we stream all over the world.
We do. We do. joy.org.au/listen live. There you go.
They do have internet, but it's very slow.
In South Georgia?
Mm.
Ah.
Well, the ship has it. Well, and the bases satellite, would have it. Satellite.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Satellite, yeah.
So both of you are avid travellers. Carol, what's your number one tip when you're on the way?
Do you mean travelling for any reason at all or to any place? Take plenty of medication that's going to cover all circumstances and never give it away to anybody else because you might need it yourself.
It's a good tip.
Yes, I like that one. Anne, what's your number one tip when you're on the go?
Travel as light as you can and take something where you can hang your clothes up to dry when you've washed them.
Ah, really good idea. Yeah, like an inflatable thing.
Chris and Carol have got these magical coat hangers.
Magic coat hangers.
I've just got one of those ones which Chris gave me, those ones that twisty and you poke your clothes through the twisty bit.
Yes.
And you stretch your thing from one side of the wall to the other.
But you know what? The reality is they don't come half as good as, they're not half as good as drugs. Take drugs.
Legal ones, Joy does not.
The lady after my own heart. Everyone wonders about my drug supply.
Well, you can buy anything in South America. You just go and show them the packet and they'll give you the same thing without a prescription.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's not very expensive. Because I ran out of a couple of things.
Cocaine, really.
That happened
well,
to
they
us.
Sell that too.
But that happened to us 3 years ago when we were in South America. We ran out of a particular prescription drug.
Yep.
We just went to the pharmacy. No problem. How many do you want?
Oh, really?
Mm. Yep.
Yeah. We're the ones
who
No
wonder
the
they have such good music in South America. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. And thank you very much for telling us all about South America. The Iguazu Falls. I've got to go and Google that. I need to know more.
Yeah, it could involve a boat, though. And remember last week, you're not into boats.
I was recoiling in horror at the thought of going for 3 days in waters tossing you from pillar to post to get to Antarctica. That didn't really impress me much.
I don't think you'd have a problem. I really don't.
Really?
Mm.
No shuffleboard, though.
They have, the ships have stabilisers, so it's kept reasonably even.
Yeah. Okay. Well, stick with us on Joy 94.9 all afternoon. Thanks for listening to Escape Pod with Mark and Joe. We've got Critical Hit coming.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.